Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th day of July, Anno Domini 2020, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. All right, let's, we are live this week. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. Last week, we had a little, that can't be right. That's Steve doing something that isn't right. I apologize, whatever Steve is doing, it's making an awful lot of noise. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
But the distortion I'm working on.
Yeah, okay.
The noise that is was, you.
Yeah, I forgot my wife had borrowed my laptop, my Chromebook, and she had turned up the sound. That's right. I apologize. That was on me. We were not here last week. It was a repeat show because my daughter had a little scare, which thank God was just a scare. She thought she had contracted COVID. It turns out that she...
That's the other scare that daughters give to you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Oh, now I'm... Now, don't ever talk to me again as long as you live. Jeez and crackers.
You know him. Yeah.
Hey, it's Steve Ray.
It's Steve
Ray. It hasn't changed in 30 years. He Why would
not.
It now?
I'm not
I've got a daughter, too.
Anything.
She's 35.
Yeah, right, right.
and now we're in a point where we're waiting for that.
Yeah, right. It changes over time. Yeah. But we had a little scare, but she's had two negative COVID-19 tests. So the doctors cleared us to get back out into the world. She has to wait until Wednesday for her. She's voluntarily waiting till Wednesday for her two-week quarantine. But the doctor has said that since we all tested negative, and particularly since she tested negative twice.
So you guys didn't even miss me last week, then?
No, we didn't. No, we wouldn't have anyway, but we certainly did.
Thank you.
All right, here's the news. You may have heard about this several times. New York State is trying to crack down on scammers who are attempting to collect unemployment benefits they're not entitled to. But some legitimately struggling out-of-work New Yorkers are getting caught in the Department of Labor's, or DOL, net. People are getting notices that the DOL thinks they're trying to apply for benefits from overseas. Turns out the culprit is that they're using a VPN. A VPN is a virtual private network, which is basically an internet connection that masks your true IP address, usually for security reasons. Particularly these days, many of us use VPNs to keep ourselves slightly more anonymous on the internet. Not really anonymous, but slightly more. But if you have to remember to disable them before using something like the DOL site. Also, VPNs are not as secure as people think. This week alone, a number of VPNs leaked the logs they swore they never even keep. Many VPNs tell you they don't keep any logs at all, and therefore they would have nothing on you that you could hand over to law enforcement even if they wanted to. But many countries have legal mechanisms whereby various authorities, with or without a warrant, depending on the jurisdiction, can compel a service provider not only to start keeping logs for specific individuals, but also in general, and also keep quiet about that fact. In other words, they have to keep logs of your traffic, but they are gagged from warning you up front, and they can't tell you even if you ask. In reality, any VPN knows where you are and to some extent at least who you are while you're using the system and may even need to keep what amount to in-memory logs, at least ephemeral data used to use the jargon term for some or all of each session just to make the service work reliably. And history suggests that ephemeral data, stuff that should evaporate forever from memory once it's no longer needed and never gets written to disk or forwarded to another server, actually has a way of surviving when it shouldn't. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Do you think you're safe using a VPN? Your choices are, I trust mine implicitly. I guess I trust mine. Well, now you've got me thinking. I don't use a VPN. VPN? And other. And, of course, if you said, well, so far we have 55 votes from 19 different locations. I don't use a VPN is well in the lead, followed by I guess I trust mine. One person says they trust theirs implicitly, which probably means they're running their own.
They're just being us.
Or they run their own. That's the only way I would trust mine. And of course, if you selected other, please go over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the left under Fascinating Stuff. You will see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 25 July 20. Do you think you're safe using a VPN? And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or you can text us at our brand-new text line number, 585-205-8887.
I remember hearing on another podcast, one of their VPN sponsors, they were talking about they had a third-party audit and everything they were promising was true. They don't keep logs. Their servers don't have hard drives in them, just great gobs of RAM.
That makes sense.
So it can't save a log, and as soon as it gets unplugged, everything's gone anyway.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and maybe. I mean, the reality is, we just said, ephemeral data sometimes isn't as ephemeral as you think it is.
Got a few minutes to super freeze the RAM cards to store, to capture the data on them.
Right.
I've seen some interesting things where they do that. You know, take liquid nitrogen and freeze RAM cards, and then put it in a different computer that you control, and you can read the data that was in the RAM.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to. The one thing you really have to remember, folks, is that particularly the free VPNs.
Yeah.
You don't really know who's running that other end.
Yeah.
Most of them, almost all of them, are overseas, and some of them are in countries that are not our friends. So, and have very different laws about what gets kept and not kept. So be very careful who you use as a VPN.
Yeah, check out where they actually reside.
I don't know of many that are in the U.S. at all.
And if it's free, they're making their money somehow by selling your data, by injecting ads into your VPN stream.
Right.
So you try to open a website and you get their ad instead.
Mm-hmm.
I have thought about running my own VPN off of one of my cloud servers, but I haven't done it. It isn't that important to me at this point.
They're high on the priority list.
Yeah, the OpenVPN is an open source free VPN you can run yourself. You have on a server you control to be safe.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just it. If you're running, of course, now the other part of that reality is most of my servers, not all of them, but most of my servers are actually virtual servers off a hosting company.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what goes on in the background there.
Yeah.
I do not. So I have tested them and et cetera, et cetera. And I've read all the reviews and yada, yada, yada. And that's why I picked the one I picked. But I don't really know.
Yeah.
You can't really
tell. Yeah, once it goes, it can go anywhere.
That's exactly right. And
and they could tell you, oh, yeah, it's here. And it could be totally somewhere else. And there's no way you're going to find that out for sure.
Right. And people say, well, I'm using Tor and I'm using this and that and the other thing. Well, the simple reality is this, ladies and gentlemen. In order for you to use a website, somebody somewhere along that chain knows where you are. Otherwise, the data aren't getting back to you.
Yeah.
And so if one person knows, a lot of people could know. It is honestly that simple. We've seen many cases where Tor was broken and not private.
Or the government has their own Tor nodes, and so they watch traffic come through it anyway.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Carl down in Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Peachy, how are you doing?
Okay. I have a quick question about internet speed.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been having trouble. I have a Windows 10 machine. It's a desktop machine. And about once per day, I've been having the following problem. My internet connection speed, both download and upload, seems to slow way down. I'll do an internet test, a speed test, that is, and I'll get under 0.5 megabits per second. Like I said, this happens about once per day. I haven't been able to figure out what's causing it yet. Sometimes I'll wake up in the morning after the computer's been on all night, and I'll have that problem. This morning I did not have the problem. I woke up and it was normal speed. However, whenever the problem occurs, all I have to do is reboot the machine, and it's back up to speed. So that's the cure. I was wondering if you could figure out what the cause might be.
Well, if it's happening, if a reboot fixes it, then it's more than likely that the problem is in your machine.
It is, yeah.
IP stack corruption?
Yeah. I mean, it's Windows 10. Yeah. How much RAM do you have?
16 gigabytes.
That's decent.
What,
there.
Is it an onboard Ethernet card, or do you have your, is it a separate card in a slot?
I think it's onboard.
And it might be a driver update. Is, what?
Might be a driver update.
Yeah, it might be a driver problem. And you're only rebooting your computer. It's not like you're rebooting the router or any of that stuff.
Oh, no, just the computer, nothing else.
It's Windows 10. That's one thing. And lately, even my machine, I've noticed it's, since some of these updates, it's like, it's slowing it down.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's a couple of things that you should do. Of course, you should dance the security tango to make sure there's nothing in the background eating up your RAM, your internet speed. That's the first thing I would think of as a culprit.
When this happens, I would try using a different internet service. Try a ping from the command line. And see if that's running slow too. Maybe it's only the web service that has a problem, and not the lower level, ICMP internet connections.
But also though, I mean, right now, I think all internet services are struggling.
Yeah.
Because more and more folks are doing, like we've said before, Zoom meetings. Everything's going to that, and it's putting a strain on a lot of this architect that wasn't meant to do all this.
Right, but if a reboot fixes it, it's likely in his machine rather than outside his machine. So one thing, I agree with Steve, one thing you might do is if you have another machine on your network, test the speed off of that one. Also, if you can do a remote desktop from one machine to another.
Do you have any other, what about any other add-ons that might have been extensions that were added on that might be doing other searches or polling while you're on the internet? Have you checked out any of those add-ons? Because quite often when you download stuff or install stuff, other stuff sneaks in and it'll add this add-on or that add-on. And even though you're just doing, say, the internet stuff, this other extension might be also going out there and trying to load and check things and everything else and adding to your slowdown.
Also, what, I'm sorry.
Say, what, does it happen at a consistent time? So we used to say that, 3 or 4 o'clock, internet got really slow because the kids got home from school.
Yeah.
But now they're always home, so the internet's always slow.
The other thing to do is, are you running anything in the background, like torrent applications? Or cloud storage apps like Dropbox or Google Drive? Is your antivirus software doing some sort of update? Do you have Steam installed, and is it doing something?
Of course, that recent update in Windows, though, now added that Edge.
Right, Microsoft Edge has always been in there.
On Chromium now, so it's actually good.
Right. The other thing is, and this is weird, but if you have an NVIDIA GeForce Experience graphics card, yes, it has been known to slow down your internet speed.
Does it make any sense?
No, of course it doesn't make any sense.
A faster graphics card to slow down your internet.
But of course, the way you handle that is check the task manager and and click your performance thing. See how much you've probably already done this, but check your CPU usage, check your memory usage. You'll see the Wi-Fi usage as well and the Ethernet usage. So, and by the way, the Bluetooth usage. If they're all running off the same card, it could be that any one of them is swamping your system.
Yeah, and a lot of PCs these days have that one single Broadcom chip that does all, you know, yep. Wi-Fi, Ethernet, you know, any communication, Bluetooth, everything.
Yeah. So have you checked your task manager?
No, I haven't checked that. Not in detail. I believe I did check it for CPU usage, and that was fine.
Right, but check it for Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and Ethernet.
Mm-hmm.
It may well be that you know. For example, I personally run Linux, so it updates various things throughout the day, and that drags down. And I've got gigabit Ethernet, so I don't notice it. But I can see that it uses that in the background once in a while.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt to check all your drivers for updates, too, if you haven't done it in a while.
Right. Mm-hmm. Particularly, the Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and Ethernet. Any of your communication drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And then check your open your resource monitor and check to see what's using your various things. Particularly, again, network stuff.
Okay, I'll give that a try. I'll check all those things.
Perfect. Let us know.
I will.
Thanks. Oh, one last thing.
Yeah.
If you're running Microsoft's firewall,
mm-hmm.
just for grins and giggles, next time you get a slowdown, turn that off. See what happens.
Okay, actually, I'm using a Bitdefender. I believe that has a built-in firewall, so I'm using that instead.
Yep. Well, whichever one you're using.
Just make sure the Defender is turned off.
Right. Well, just turn it off and see if your speed jumps back up again. At least now you got an idea of where the problem might lie.
Mm-hmm.
And check those extensions. Make sure something else isn't in there running in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check that, too.
All righty. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
It's just Windows saying you got to reboot every now and then.
Yeah.
So it usually crashes before you get to that.
Yeah.
No. Just kidding.
Soundbite's your name.
We had a guy many years ago who ran our Linux servers over in the College of Business, and he got really angry one day when one of our servers had been up so long that the day counter, the uptime counter, rolled over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must not have been a 32-bit counter then, because that's a long time.
That's a long time, yeah. I update mine quite, you know, my system updates. Very rarely do I have to reboot. Very rarely. But once in a while I do.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me in.
Sure.
Couple questions. First one is I'm working on extending my Wi-Fi range, and I'm wondering about placement of Nest systems. Is it Nest or Mesh?
Yeah, Nest.
Both.
Nest is a brand name. Mesh is what it does.
The technology.
Right.
Okay. So placement of units. I have an extender that's fairly close to the main unit,
right?
Because it was suggested that I do that, and I'm still not getting the range I want in the rooms on the outside, you know, the outside edge of the house.
Right.
So I can put another unit in, yes?
Well, it depends on what your
mesh network is.
They should all be the same brand.
Yeah.
It's very tricky to get different brand router and extenders and meshes to talk to each other.
Right.
Okay, so I would use the same brand.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
How about placement?
Well, let me suggest that what you do is map your Wi-Fi. And the way you do that is you download to your phone some sort of Wi-Fi analyzer program. On Android phones, it's called Wi-Fi Analyzer.
I think there's the same one for
iOS. And then you turn that on, and what it does is it shows you the strength of your signal. Walk around your house, find where the signal drops, and put your extender at the place where it's still high.
Hello.
Gotcha.
Just before the drop.
I've already downloaded those programs, and I know what you're talking about.
Excellent.
So I will do that, but I wasn't sure how to proceed from there.
Yeah, that's what you do. You should
and one of the things that I've also found to make it easier is you set up your new mesh router when you're physically right near your main one.
Right.
And then even especially with Nest and the Google setup process, then it tells you to move it to where you want it to go, mm-hmm. and it will test it itself and see if it's a good enough signal.
Right.
The problem you run into is kitchens and all the metal, bathrooms and all the metal piping. Those are the hard places to get around and through.
Right.
And I've been trying to figure out a way if the Nest can be a bridge. Because I've got one company, they have an Ethernet wire running to the other half of the building, and I want to put the Nest on the Ethernet and have it pick up the Ethernet and then rebroadcast the Wi-Fi, and it doesn't look like it can do that.
Yeah, right. I don't know.
Because that's the old technology.
Right. But yeah, for what you're doing, do a map of your house, and it can be informal. You don't have to draw a floor plan. But grid paper, floor plan, I know. That would make my wife happy for a whole day. But definitely map your house, and that'll tell you where you should put your extender.
Okay. The other thing I was thinking was I have a front and back bedroom, and between the bedrooms is a bathtub. And I put the extender. Well, the main unit is in the living room. The extender is in the back bedroom. And my office is in the front bedroom, so I'm thinking that since it's the extender is at the height of an outlet, because it's plugged directly into an outlet,
right?
That it's trying to go through the tub and having problems.
Yep, that's absolutely possible. One of the things that's not just the pipe, the bathtub, but all the pipes in the walls. I mean, think about it, visualize where all those pipes are.
Right.
So one thing, just and to fix that would just be an extension cord, right? That's really all you need there, or of course a power strip.
Yep.
So I tried the extension cord because that's what my thinking was moving forward with this, and I hung the extender on the top of the curtains, so it would be over the bathtub.
Sure.
And it didn't work.
Yeah, well, because also, of the pipes.
Right. Where are the pipes in the walls? That's the other problem. So, again, you might need to one thing you can do, again, to map it, move that extender from, maybe near the curtains to near the door to back near the curtains and see, and then go in the other room and check the strength of the Wi-Fi signal. It may just be distance.
Did that. So far, we're on the same sheet of music.
Yeah. So you may need to put it in a different room. I don't know that I would put it in the bathroom. I don't know what else you have.
Or put an additional one in.
Or put an additional one maybe in the hallway or you know.
Or even in my office.
Or in your office.
There you go.
It's not going to magically increase the signal from the other thing.
Right.
So you need to put it somewhere where the signal is strong, so that it can push more signal farther.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break.
Okay, I just had one more quick question.
Okay, hang on. I'll get you after the break.
I'll hang on.
Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Bill from Irondequoit, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites and Bill from Irondequoit patiently hanging on the line. What's your next question, Bill?
Thanks. Next and last question for now is on my Chromebook. All of a sudden now I have notification tabs coming out of the right-hand side indiscriminately at different times while I'm on, even if I'm on apps. Is that something new for them, or?
Yeah, there was a recent update that changed that. The last update did a whole bunch of really good things, and one of the things that it did was fix notifications. Of course, if you don't like that, you might think it was not so good.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things they did. I've never tried to turn those off. I don't know where you can do that. Oh, yeah. If you go into the gear, the settings, and search for notification, you get to Google Assistant, and you can turn off, allow the assistant to show you notifications.
Okay. All right. And that was it.
There's also a per app setting, I think.
Some apps will ignore that and do their own. So you check what's showing you stuff, and you may have to turn.
Like, I want to get notifications from email, but I don't need notifications from this other website.
Right.
Yeah, and I just don't want them while I'm in doing something in the middle of something.
Right.
All of a sudden, there's the tabs popping up. I mean, it's not in the middle of the screen; it's down in the right hand corner, but still.
Right.
Is there a do not disturb setting?
I would have to look. Good question.
I'm actually looking at it now. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, cool. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Thanks.
It's coming on phones. Oh, it looks like there's plugins for Chrome.
Yeah, there are plugins for Chrome. There isn't a built-in do not disturb.
Dave, where are you calling from?
Yeah, that's coming on phones where you can turn on the do not disturb so you don't get calls or something during meetings.
Right. And if you're like me, when you see a notification, you have to answer it.
See, that's the joke about having the watch, is now you can glance at your watch to see a notification instead of pulling your phone out of your pocket.
Right.
The next step will be the glasses, that instead of looking at your watch, it just pops up on your glasses, and it goes, and then you'll go, limp.
I will tell you right now, I told you this before, I did a thing for Google Glass, so I had one for a while. Amazing. But they can be very distracting. People should never wear them while driving or walking or pretty much doing anything that requires any sort of concentration. But having them there and being able to sit there and like a bing happens and there's a little thing in your eye and you can ignore it or do what you want with it. It only shows up for a few seconds.
I've been watching the Upload TV series on Amazon Prime Video.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of neat. When someone in the real world is wearing a VR set talking to someone in the Upload world, and then they have to take the headset off to answer someone in their real world, and their avatar just freezes motionless, and the other person is waving their hands in front of their face, and I guess you got somebody more important to talk to.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Penfield, New York. What's up, Dave?
Good afternoon. Back in January or so when they had the special offer, I got PCloud.
Oh, yeah.
The 1 terabyte.
Good for you.
And I've had a couple difficulties that I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
As a premises, the reason I got it was I have several platforms, and I want to be able to share my files comfortably across the platforms. And, over the years, you inevitably develop duplication of files across things. So I have 2 PCs at home here, and then I have another one. Let's say it's remote. It's in a place that we normally go for 3 or 4 months out of the year.
Right.
The other thing was just for the security of having the files backed up off site, although I appreciate it's not a true backup.
Right.
Anywho, the first difficulty I had was when I was doing a PCloud update, and the update didn't come to completion, and that made the P drive unavailable for me.
Right.
And now, as I understand it, I've been loading all my files into the P drive. I haven't been doing the other way that you talked about, where you click on a folder and you say, send this to P Cloud. I've been directly moving my files into the P drive.
Right.
I don't know if that makes a difference.
Well, it means you don't have a second copy of them on your computer.
So when it says they're synchronized, does that mean they're not physically resident on the local drive?
Maybe not. It depends. I would check the settings to see how you've set it up, because you can set it up so that it shares the document folder. Even if you haven't told it to, that might be the default. And if you didn't change that, it's also backing up the documents folder. But if you don't put anything in the documents folder, of course, it's always in sync because there's nothing there to sync.
Okay. I pretty much ignore the set folders like documents and music, and I, you know, try to set up my own file system.
Right. So, but what I'm saying is that sync message means that it's saying that those folders that are default are synced, even if there's nothing in them.
Okay, right. In my mind, what I was imagining it was if I'm moving files in from this computer, that it keeps a local copy, and it synchronizes those files to other computers.
Not if you move it, no.
Right. If you save a file to the documents folder, that's what happens. You have a local copy and a pCloud cloud copy.
So you're saying just to that one folder, a folder called documents?
Well, whatever you've got set up. Normally it's documents, music, pictures.
No, I have a whole file structure of my own.
Well, then it's probably none of those.
Okay.
Right? Because unless you set it up, pCloud doesn't know about your file structure. It's not magic. You would have to tell it. One of the things you do when you set up pCloud is say, here are the folders I want synced.
I see.
If you didn't do that, you have no folder syncing.
Okay, so at this point, according to the way I've done it, which is just copy files into P, then all those files are virtual.
Well, if you've copied them to P, then they're on your local drive wherever you copied them from.
Right,
if you moved them,
I was planning on deleting those once I was satisfied.
Right.
So once they're up there, if you save directly to that, or if you erase the local copy, then the only copies are virtual.
Right. Okay. So then, what I was worried about is a couple times it's happened now, the update won't come to completion, and the result is that the P drive's not available. And I was thinking, well, if these files are local on my computer somewhere, where are they if I can't access them through the P drive?
Right, and if you've been deleting them from your local drive or saving directly to pCloud, they are not on your local drive. So the way pCloud is designed to work, and therefore will work both best and seamlessly, is you save stuff to your local drive. You tell pCloud what folders you want synchronized to the cloud, and then pCloud will, in the background, automatically synchronize those. So you will always have two copies, one local on your machine and one in the cloud. But if you haven't set it up that way, particularly if you use your own file structure, then you don't have them on your personal drive. You have them only in the cloud.
Well, my goal was to have a single file structure that was common to all three platforms.
Right. So whatever folder name you start with on your file structure, tell pCloud to sync that folder.
Well, what he wants is nothing local and everything in the cloud.
That's two things then.
Right. In that case, you can do that. And what you do is, in order to share it to another machine, the easiest way to do that is to go to my.pcloud.com and log into your account, find a folder you want to share, and then click share. And then you can either share the link or invite people to the folder itself. And if you say invite to folder, you can share the folder with other pCloud users, one of whom is, of course, you. I mean, you would use your same username and password on another machine. If you share the link, you can share it with anybody, even if they don't have a pCloud account.
Okay, but so if I do this and I click share and not share the link, does that mean the other platforms will see it with the same structure within the P drive?
You will see the same structure. You will see everything from the folder you shared down. Right, so let's say you have three folders in...
So maybe I need to make a master folder.
Right.
With D and only have that one folder.
Right.
Okay. Okay, then that should work. It's an extra layer, but...
Right, but remember, now, the original idea behind pCloud is that it is a backup. You're not using it as a backup.
Yeah, I would be very wary about not keeping a local copy.
Right.
Well...
I mean, that's up to you.
Yep.
But the point is, you now need to be aware that you only have one copy of all of your data, and it's in the cloud. If you lose your internet connectivity, you don't have those anymore.
And if, God forbid, the company goes out of business, all your files are gone.
Right.
Right.
That's why we always say at least three places to back up your data.
Right. But now he has no backup. He only has storage.
What I'm responsible to do then is to keep my own... file structure local to each of the three machines,
right?
Which would be synced to the pCloud structure,
right? So that master folder you have on your computer, your local hard drive, tell pCloud to sync that, and then on the other computers, you'll see that same master folder on those local hard drives.
And you can share.
And then I would, but then I'd have to make local copies on them, right?
No, it would share that master folder to the C drive on the other computer.
Right, so here's the deal.
Oh, okay.
On your main computer, you put everything on your hard drive and sync it to pCloud.
Well, yeah.
Just listen.
No, it's okay.
I know that's not the way you do it, but this is the way it's meant to be used.
Fine, go.
You save everything to your hard drive and sync it to pCloud.
And then you have two copies.
Now you have two copies. Now, on the other machines... You can invite to the folder, and they will be able to share those documents from the cloud the way you want to do it now, but you still have two copies, one local on your main machine and one in the cloud that every other machine shares.
And so, in essence, the second machine you connect will make a third copy.
Okay, but then when I'm at my remote location, I'm going to want to have a local copy there, too.
Then you copy everything down and do a sync that way as well.
Okay.
So you add that computer to your pCloud account, and so it's
or just copy all the files down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean that's
just another place. Then he's got it as backup.
Right.
Okay. So then those other two copies on the other two devices will automatically be kept up to date locally.
They are not local. If you invite to folder. You are sharing the folder, but not letting them download the data. So it wouldn't be on those other machines. It would just be a link into the cloud folder of those. So, for example, I have a Chromebook. If I were to put it on my Chromebook, I would be able to share that folder to my Chromebook and see all of those files, but they wouldn't be resident on my Chromebook because, frankly, there's no space for those on my Chromebook.
There's not a download as needed option?
I can download any one of them as I need it, but they wouldn't all live on my local storage.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. The second issue I had, and maybe it's kind of inherent in what your answer was here, I was having problems when I was working live on a file that was on the P drive that it wouldn't be really synchronized. In other words, I was working on a Word document, and at a certain point it refused to save. It just flat out said, I don't remember what the message was. It was a couple months ago, but it refused to save, and so I went back into... pCloud rewind and found the last point save and recovered from that. And I was thinking, oh, pCloud's so great. You know, I have this rewind. I can make up for Microsoft errors, but I think it was really a pCloud error.
It may have been, or it just simply may have been an internet glitch. Remember, when you're saving and loading files directly from the internet, you are at the mercy of the quality of the internet connection.
And is it possible that file was opened on another computer at the same time?
No.
But your and it's not just your connection. Remember, you connect to your company, your internet service provider. They connect to their downstream provider.
They connect.
So it could have been just a little glitch in any one of those that prevented pCloud, that prevented, let's say, Word from saving that file directly to pCloud. Now, that's different from something like Microsoft Live 365 or whatever they're calling it this week, or iCloud.
OneDrive.
Or Live Office 365.
Right, yeah, that's the overservice, and then OneDrive is the feature of the overservice.
Right.
Everything is Microsoft is the same thing.
Right, it's OneDrive and or iCloud or Google Drive. You're actually working on Google Drive. You're actually working on the server itself, and so you, if there's a lost connection, you don't lose any data at all.
Okay.
On the way you're using pCloud and OneDrive and iCloud, you're working with a local copy that gets saved back to the server, and that can, if there's a glitch in that save, that's where the problem can come in.
Okay. I realize I've taken a lot of time here, but just one last scenario, make sure I know what I'm doing. Let's say I'm working on a file on one computer. And that's the computer that has the local copy, and so it goes in and syncs to pCloud. Now, when I'm in my remote location, I'm going to want to work on that same file, and I can't go back to my local copy on my 1,000-mile-away computer. So what should I do to work on a live copy from that remote machine?
My suggestion would be to copy that file down to your machine, edit it there, and when you're done, copy it back to the P drive.
Okay, but I'm going to have to remember to copy it.
The way you're using pCloud, yes.
Yeah. So if you create a local synced folder, it would do that automatically.
Right, but you're not doing that, so you would have to remember to do that yourself.
But could I create a local synced folder?
Yes, that's what pCloud is designed to do.
Okay. All right, I'll have to work with this a little.
You know, I get it. It's a weird concept to get because it's a new way of doing business. But pCloud is designed to sync to the cloud and sync everything correctly, and so anything you do in one place is automatically synced in all the other places. But the way you've got it set up, that's not what's happening.
Yeah, and I looked up the error message I got when I was trying to work on a text file, a little Perl script, and it kept giving me a message that it looked like this had been changed someplace, updated somewhere else, and I looked that up, and it said some cloud services they have issues with their dates when they're syncing and so on.
Well, if you've got it. Every once in a while, like I said, there's a glitch, and if in that little bit of glitch was the date of the file update, it would get out of sync.
And that's why I asked if you had the file open on another computer, because computer saves it at the same time, that can be a problem.
Oh yeah, for sure. Got to keep that under control for sure. Yeah. Okay, I guess I'll try to digest this and see how it works.
Good luck. It is a difficult thing to wrap your head around as a new way of working. But
once you get it all done, you know, you're good. You know, you can sit back, and this way you've protected yourself in case anything happens. Too many folks don't take the time and effort that you're doing to get in and back up their stuff. And we hear the stories constantly, you know, from year to year. Oh, well, I meant to. At least I got to congratulate you. You're at least taking the time and effort, and that's the way to go.
It takes some time to figure it all out.
It's daunting. Yes, it's daunting, but the bottom line is how important is your data?
And it's very important, of course.
Well, right, of course.
That's where you spend the time and effort.
Absolutely. Right now, the way you've set it up, it sounds like you do not actually have a backup. You have one copy living in the cloud, which isn't bad. It's just not ideal.
Correct. Correct. Okay. I got that.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Bye-bye. And for those of you who are wondering what the heck we're actually talking about, if you go to soundbites.org, you'll see Steve has pinned at the top of the page backing up at asknick.com. And if you go to that page on my website at asknick.com, if you click the backing up Ask Nick link in the post, you'll see that one of the solutions that I have is pCloud, and they offer a lifetime subscription. Currently, I don't know what it is today. It's still $175 for half a terabyte, one time charge, lifetime charge, $350 for 2 terabytes.
It says 2 terabytes is 65% off today.
Yeah.
So I just installed the pCloud client on my Mac.
Well, but before you do let me just say full disclosure. If you use the link on my webpage, it's my affiliate link. I get a few pennies here and there, which I very much appreciate.
I was going to say, you're not taking any vacation on that money.
Yeah, you ain't kidding, but I still appreciate it so much.
Yeah, no, it's still, yeah.
But at any rate, sorry, go ahead. You just installed
it. Yeah, I just installed the client, and I get a warning that software developer Benjamin Fleischer is trying to load a kernel extension.
There you go.
So why doesn't it say pCloud?
Because on your machine,
Benjamin Fleischer wrote the Fuse plugin,
right,
that lets Linux machines read other file systems.
Right, exactly.
But it doesn't warn you that in the installer.
Right.
Do everything but.
Yeah.
Right. That's Mr. But to you, buddy.
Thank you.
Oh, I see.
No, I'm older.
That's right. But yeah, so if you're not backing up, shame on you. It's that simple. If you are backing up, you need at least 2 and probably more. As I say on that page, you don't have enough backups. You just don't. I don't care how many you have. You don't have enough. And one possibility is something like pCloud, which if you set it up the way they suggest, which is not the way Dave did it, but if you set it up the way they suggest, is every time you save something to whatever folder you've designated, it is automatically in the background backed up to the cloud. So you don't even have to think about it anymore. It is the easiest backup I have ever used, and that includes the stuff I wrote myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's immediate. So, and if you're not connected to the internet, the next time you are, it works.
Yep.
It does the backup for you. So it really is, so far at least, the one I have found to be easiest. I've gotten it for myself, my wife, my daughter, so that they don't have to think anymore. Set it up, walk away, set it and forget it. Boom, done.
Steve Gibson on Security Now did a couple of podcasts on file syncing services because he was doing the same thing at his girlfriend's house, wanted to replicate his development environment. And he went through a dozen, because he's Steve Gibson, he went through a dozen different programs and figured out which one worked best for him.
Right. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but haha, don't go away. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick, Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. Take that quick bio break. I know I will, and then we'll be back with a whole lot more Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported thanks to your incredible generosity. Jazz 90.1. Give us a call and we will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. And we have Richard from Irondequoit, New York, right on the line. How are you, Richard?
I am very well. Thank you. A half hour you were talking about range extenders.
Yeah.
Yes, and I believe there was a website you can connect to or something. I have three or four range extenders by Netgear. And it's not helping the television in my kitchen, which is right next to the refrigerator. I do believe I need to move that. However, please reread or give me that advice that you gave that caller about doing something with range extenders, please.
Oh, what we did was we talked about mapping your network environment. And the way you do that is you get whether you have an Android phone or an iPhone, there is a program called Wi-Fi Analyzer. And what it does is it shows you the strength of a signal at any one point. So you can walk around your house with your phone, and it will show you the change in Wi-Fi signal as you go around the house. Now, when I did it, I discovered two things. One is where I had to put my extender to get a decent signal, and also the fact that in every room in my house, I had a great signal except in the kitchen, because our next-door neighbor on that side had a really powerful antenna right there in the same, whatever it was, six gigahertz range or whatever it is, six megahertz. So I just moved mine to, channel 6, and I moved my stuff to channel 14, which was clear, and everything came in just fine. So it will tell you not only the strength of your signal, but where you have clear signal.
So is that WifiAnalyzer.com?
No, it's an app you download to your phone from either the Google Store or the App Store, the Apple App Store.
I got it. So as I move my phone around, I would want to put the range extender in the weakest spot.
No, you want to put it in a strong spot. No, you want to put it in a strong spot that is in line of sight to your weak spot.
Oh.
See what I'm saying? So
line of sight. I know what that means. Okay.
Yeah. So that in between the two is no pipes or bathtubs or refrigerators or any of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to move that TV for one thing. Thank you very much. Now I got it.
There you go. Have fun, Richard.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. It's Wi-Fi is arcane because we can't see it. And we think of it as, it's radio, so it should be going everywhere. But, listening to this station and many others, you drive around and you go under a bridge or you go between two buildings or whatever.
Yep. And quite often, that's why running an Ethernet wire, as painful as it is that first time, will often run a lot better.
Yep. So you want to be kind of aware of where you're going and what you're doing. Our next caller is Mike. From Caledonia, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi. How you doing? Good. I've got an Epson 3170 photo scanner, which is an older scanner.
Right.
And it runs on 32-bit system. I used to run it through Windows. My Windows machine died. I tried to install it on my 64-bit Ubuntu 1804, and I've tried for a year, and I haven't been able to find out how to get it to run. So I gave up. Put 32-bit Xubuntu on my 64-bit laptop and then installed it to Xubuntu, and it still can't find it. Am I guessing wrong that by putting a 32-bit Exabutnu on my 64-bit system, that will work?
It should. Hold on. Okay, let me back up. There's a program called Simple Scan,
right.
Which I thought.
What scanner number was it again?
3170. Now, I downloaded the software from the Epson site that has the drivers and another package, a plug-in package, which it said is needed. But when I start Simple Scan, it says I need to install the driver software. So that's it's got me so confused now again.
Right. Wow. You should.
So installing the 32-bit scanner onto the 32-bit Exabutnu, which is on a 64-bit machine, that should work.
Well, you mean, are you running it as a...
VM?
VM?
No.
So how are you running 32-bit Linux inside of 64-bit Linux?
No. I'm running... the computer itself is a 64-bit machine. So I installed 32-bit Linux on it.
Oh, it's got a 64-bit machine running 32-bit operating system.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That really shouldn't be an issue. But it should run. If it's not finding it, I don't think it's the 32-bit 64-bit problem.
Okay.
Hold on. I didn't look up the specs of the. What was the model number again? 3170?
Yeah. They do have Linux drivers. They also have Windows 64 and 32-bit drivers.
Right, and I put the...
From ME to 10.
Yeah, oh no, there's a lot of drivers, I know. I originally tried installing it on Wine on my 64-bit Ubuntu, but I couldn't get that to work. So then I just kind of gave up on the 64-bit machine.
They do have Linux drivers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's supported. It's not working. And I was wondering if it was because the 32-bit Exabutnu was on a 64-bit machine operating system.
No, that shouldn't matter. The driver you download should be fine.
The latest driver is from 2011, though.
Well, right. They don't make that anymore.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, how is it connecting to your Linux system?
USB. The scanner is connected through a USB cord.
Right. It should work.
Okay.
There are drivers for versions of Linux.
Yeah.
And the scanner driver should work. And let me pick something from 2011.
There's another scanner program called ViewScan that I've used that supports older scanners as well. And it looks like they have Debian, RPM, and TGZ for different Linux versions.
Right, and I tried that. I've tried just about every scanner program available, I think. And I was talking via email to a guy, a tech from ViewScan, and he said I needed the plug-in package. And I told him the plug-in package only comes in 32-bit. And he eventually got back to me and said, yeah, I can't find anything. You're out of luck.
Huh.
That's when I was trying it on the 64-bit.
Yeah. Well, look, if you're running 32-bit Exabuntu.
Mm-hmm.
And it still doesn't work, there's something else that's not right.
Yeah.
Either you're not connecting to the USB, and that's the only way this connects, right? There's no network or any of that.
Yeah. How old is the scanner?
Oh, I don't know.
Pretty old. There were problems. A lot of the early scanners were parallel and had a USB bridge inside the scanner, so outside was a USB port, and that's what I've seen a lot of the scanner programs not able to handle those types of scanners.
Mm-hmm. Well, now if I do, and I forget which one it is now, but I think it was LS USB, and it saw it.
Right.
And but it, you know, so I know it's the machine is seeing the scanner.
Just not the driver just to run it.
It's just not seeing the drive. SimpleScan is not seeing the drivers that I've installed.
Right. Okay, so
new scanner's $100.
You want the other set? Yeah.
Well, that was my next alternative was to get a different scanner, but I'm hoping I could get this to work. It's kind of gotten to be a project now.
Yeah.
No, I get that, but it doesn't. I see that other people are having the same issue.
Yeah. But mostly on 64-bit machines. I can't find anybody who's tried to install it on a 32-bit machine.
Right. That's what makes me think that there's a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't the driver.
Right.
Maybe the scanner itself is malfunctioning.
Right.
No, because it works in a Mac machine.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's what I thought about maybe even the USB cable that it's not working, but my wife's machine is a Mac, and I plug it in there, and it comes up right away.
Right. It may just be that nobody's written a proper driver since 2011, and nobody's maintained it.
The scanner itself is 15 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's an old scanner.
Yeah. I remember in the early days, we used to sell the Agfa Arcus scanner.
Oh, I remember that.
It was $3,000 for the scanner and another grand for the SCSI card to run it.
Yeah.
And we sold that to all of our graphic arts departments.
Wow.
Yep.
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, really.
Well,
because it had the optional transparency head, so you could do transparent materials.
Right.
Do you think uninstalling the SimpleScan and all the drivers and starting all over again might...
I would uninstall all the drivers. I would install SimpleScan by itself and see what it finds.
Oh, okay.
Uninstall everything and just with SimpleScan see what it finds. Whether it's 64-bit or 32-bit shouldn't matter because there's a bunch of built-in drivers, including an Epson generic driver. So unless the 3170 has some really, really weirdness about it, it should at least find it and do a standard scan on it.
Right. Okay. All right. I will try. I'll see what goes on.
Good luck.
Another suggestion I just found is to install a VM, put a 32-bit Linux in a VM inside your 64-bit machine.
That's about it. Thanks.
All right. We got another text message in here. And it says, hello, I have a six-year-old Asus tablet. When I turn on the Wi-Fi, it shows me 15 networks. My one-year-old Samsung tablet only shows me 3 networks. Why the difference? Am I doing this from the same house? I am doing this from the same house.
You're holding it different.
Yeah.
The placement of the antennas in the tablet can determine what networks it sees based on the interference your body's electric field is creating.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them you're seeing are probably so far away that the second tablet doesn't have as great a reception.
Right. As long as
you see the one that's in your house, that's all it needs to
see.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. One of the issues that we generally find with these things is that as time has gone on and people have tried – companies have tried to save money. They're using, let's be honest, cheaper and cheaper components. And a component that 15 years ago, mm-hmm. or 6 years ago rather, would see 15 different networks, the newer components, cheaper.
Yeah, the filtering and everything else is totally different.
It also may be that it's different types of networks. So it used to be A, B, C, and whatever. And this one may only see 2 or 3 of those types.
AC, AX we're on now.
Right.
Wi-Fi 6. So they were trying to get rid of all the numbers, and now we're on Wi-Fi 6.
Right.
Yeah.
So it may simply be that you're only seeing... And they come and go. For example, we've been talking today about Wi-Fi Analyzer. I will, if I run that long enough, suddenly new nets pop up, and then they disappear again, and they pop up again.
Extreme range, yeah.
Right.
And that may be by design in the new tablet, because it only needs to connect to a strong signal that's close to you, so it may not bother showing you weak signals.
They're all radio waves, and the way they get bounced around and everything else, you know, I mean, somebody all of a sudden gets in the middle of it, you know, say the signal that... oh, I was seeing all these before, but if somebody happened to get in the way or something else, you know, it can disrupt signals and everything else.
Right.
I've read stories where people call tech support and say they can't get onto the internet, and, you know, my good neighbor's gone, but I can only see the bad neighbors.
Right, yes.
You mean the good neighbor that you were stealing Wi-Fi from?
Right.
Is gone?
So clearly you were not a good neighbor.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Oh, and we have in the chat, in the YouTube channel, we have a person who said, no computer problems right now, but keep up the good work. Lots of love from down under. So he's either in Australia or in a basement somewhere. I don't know which it is, but I'm assuming Australia. So thank you very much.
Maybe an Australian basement.
Maybe an Australian basement. Could be both.
Well, I
Let's
have
not
one.
Limit the poor person.
Yeah, because I do have one friend that I talk to on a
no,
regular
you do
basis.
Not.
Seriously, I got one.
Unbelievable.
Just about every other day down in Australia on the ham radio. And he has catched the show once in a while when he can stay up that late.
Right, right. For him,
for
that's
him
very
it's late.
It's also winter for him, so.
Yeah.
Good luck there. But of course, we're not only live on the air, but we're also streaming at jazz901.org, and we're on YouTube, and you can download the podcast, and we're just available everywhere. Whether you want us to, we'll walk into your home and do the show live. We don't care. We'll do whatever it takes to get people to listen. In the meantime, how about we just go back to the phone and we'll talk to Barb from Rochester, New York. Hi, Barb. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you. The only exception is my phone won't work, my iPhone. For a week and a half, I have not been able to open it up. The only thing that shows up is the little Apple icon with the bite out of it, and that's it.
It's stuck on the boot screen. Have you tried rebooting it?
Yes, I have, numerous times.
Have you tried connecting it to a computer and restoring it?
Yes, and nothing came up.
It's broken.
Wow! See all that high tech you just got?
I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah, something is probably wrong on the storage drive, and it can't load an OS. It can't boot the OS that's there.
Oh, and when I hold it down, several days after this happened, I would get like a real thin, paper-thin line across the bottom. Light blue that would come up, go across every now and then, like it was looping around, I guess.
May also be something wrong with the screen then.
Oh. Huh.
What model phone is it?
Very old. It's a 4S.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I like it.
Probably not worth repairing.
Yeah.
Let me see. So, what we've, yeah.
If you long press the home and the wake sleep button, whatever
there's a DFU mode. Yeah, you plug it into your computer and put it in DFU mode. The computer may be able to reinstall the OS, but if the computer doesn't see it, then it can't even try to load the OS. Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I have been doing that on its own. It's not plugged into anything else, so but you need to plug it into a computer.
Plug it into a computer and restore the OS, yeah.
Well, but it says here for iPhone 6, 6S, or earlier, you can break the reboot. You might break the reboot loop by long pressing the home and wake sleep button at the same time for at least 10 seconds. Then your phone will vibrate and break the reboot loop,
right? And it goes into DFU mode where you can reinstall the OS.
Okay, and I have tried holding it down and doing that. I went to Apple and they tried it, and I went to AT&T and they tried it, and nothing happened. So they kind of gave me what you said initially. It's toast.
Yeah.
So
treat yourself to a new phone.
Oh, I have a new phone. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, my problem is, when I went to Apple, they told me I didn't have anything stored in the cloud. So if I switch to a new phone, I've got nothing, right? I lose my pictures and my text messages and everything else.
You've
correct?
Probably already lost them.
If you let's try to give her a little hope here somewhere.
If the phone won't boot, then you can't get to any of the data.
Right. So if you do put it into DFU or device firmware update mode by plugging it in and all of that, you might be able to recover that stuff.
No, it erases the phone and installs a clean OS.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, all right then.
Ow, that hurts.
Oh, yeah. So that's what they call a hard boot or something like
yeah.
that.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
What about system recovery?
Erases the phone and restores the new OS.
That's why Android phones are looking better off.
Well, now the same thing happens on that.
Not if you're using Google.
Well, no. But the point is she didn't do that.
She didn't have a backup loaded. She didn't have iCloud turned on. So she's
I'm sorry to say it sounds like that's the truth. You're kind of done.
We do work with a data recovery company. For iPhone recovery, you're looking about $700 in about 3 months.
3 months. Well, yeah, well, I did speak to them, and they said $700 to $1,900, which...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want it faster, then it costs more.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I just thought I'd take a chance.
Yep. Sorry, Barb. Hopefully you've turned on cloud storage for your new phone.
Yeah, turn on cloud backup so that you get that second copy of everything, just in case something goes wrong with your phone.
Oh, yes, I've learned my lesson, but I do have a question. My old phone, as it just sits there... Could possibly someday information be retrieved off of it, or the pictures or anything?
From a recovery company that can go in with an electron microscope and read the individual bit levels of the NRAM chips.
Right.
Okay. All right. So then I would have to pay the big bucks to do
big,
that.
Big,
okay.
Bucks, yeah.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
Sorry.
Thank you for your help.
Sorry, Barb.
Sorry, Barb. Okay.
All righty.
Bye-bye. Okay, and for all the rest of you...
Everyone, listen.
Yeah, right. For all the rest of you, let Barb's pain be your pleasure. If you don't have backup turned on, if you don't have cloud backup turned on your phone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone, turn it on today. Back up everything to the cloud. It's ridiculously easy on both iPhones and Android phones to turn that stuff on, get yourself backed up to the cloud, your pictures in particular, so that you always have them. If you use something like Google Photos, you can save an unlimited number of pictures.
And that's the biggest thing we hear about iPhones. Well, it says my storage is full. So pay the 99 cents a month, $12 a year. So then you don't have to pay the $700 to $1,900 to get your phone recovered.
Yes. Right. And you can download Google Photos to an iPhone as well. It's free with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before we go to coming up on a break, we had somebody text in and says, tell the caller with the scanner issue to run it in terminal and it will run as sudo. Might be a permissions problem. Fred from Henrietta.
Yeah. If he runs it as sudo, so you can, in terminal mode, you type S-U-D-O, sudo. It means super user do this as a super user.
Make me a sandwich. No, make it yourself. Sudo, make me a sandwich. Okay.
Okay. and if you run your terminal emulator, like simple scan or whatever from the terminal emulator, just type in sudo space, whatever it is, simple scan, whatever. It may then run correctly. And if it's true, then your problem is that it's a permissions issue. And if that's the way that works, then you can get around that in one of several different ways. But we won't go into all of those ways now because we pretty much have to take a break. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. But if you text us, be prepared to retext us because we may have questions like what kind of computer, etc. Back in just a couple of minutes, 29 minutes after the hour, sound bites.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
I think he's got to get polka music to this.
No, that would be too obvious. Too normal. Well, if there's anything Rob isn't, it's normal.
That's true.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Hey, we got 56 votes in the poll, so please vote in the poll. So far, I don't use a VPN is way ahead. As you heard at the top of the show, we've had some issues, particularly here in Rochester, particularly with people who are trying to enroll in employment, unemployment stuff. And because they're running a VPN, New York State comes back and says, no, I'm sorry, you're in Romania or, you know, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And so, no, you cannot enroll in unemployment in Rochester, New York when you're in Romania. No. So you have to turn off your VPN. And of course, that led us to a story that that VPNs are not nearly as secure as people think they are. It would be great if they were, but they are not.
They always talk. The ads always talk about all the surf anonymously. No, that's not what they do.
It's not what they do at all.
Right. Although I did like the one that was called Hide My Ass.
Yeah.
.com.
One thing I would like to say just before you start in is anybody, if you've got questions in that, call in now. Yeah. I hate it when we get up to, you know, 5-10 minutes before the show's ending, and I got to tell folks, sorry, can't get you on.
Right.
And then they go slam and hang up the phone. It's like
it's our fault.
Yeah.
That they called in with 2 minutes left in the show.
Yeah. So, yeah. Just warning you now, call in and we
call
can
early,
get
call often.
Yep. Get you on.
On Tuesday, by the way, Google announced the general availability of Chrome OS 84, which adds a new Explore app, overview, mode improvements, and more. The Explore app is replacing the Get Help app and offers an online, offline available help center and more. When a convertible Chromebook is in tablet mode, you can now press the up or down volume button to snap a photo or start or stop video recording. Video captured in the Chrome OS camera app now, thank heaven, save an MP4 format rather than the MK, whatever the number was, format, so they can be more easily shared and used in other apps. You can now drag a window to the left or right edge to quickly set up split screen and overview mode. Those with multiple displays can also drag windows between displays while in overview mode. You can have you've been able to have multiple desktops for a long time. So you could have one desktop that has all your Chrome apps and another one that has all your Linux apps and another one that has all your Android apps and then switch among them with ease. Mm-hmm. But they've actually improved that overview mode for switching among them. You can now control microphone access in the settings for Linux. By default, that setting will be toggled off. So your security is enhanced. You can now resize a floating virtual keyboard by dragging the corners. It's now possible to search within ChromeVox, which is the Chrome OS built-in screen reader for the visually impaired, to find what you are looking for even faster. Simply open the menu. You'll be placed right in the search field. You can search for a given item or use the arrow keys to navigate the menus. And as always, a bunch of bugs were fixed as well. This state will be progressively rolling out over the coming days. Most devices should have it available to them now, but if your device doesn't have it, it will be available over in the next day or two. They started rolling out on Tuesday, so most people should have it by now.
I assume, yeah.
Right. So are you ready for a new version of the Chrome OS, an improved version of the Chrome OS? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887.
Speaking of which, text in. This one's, I think, towards Steve. Tried to find the Wi-Fi analyzer in the Apple's App Store. See several analyzers, but none with that name. Any in the Apple Store that you recommend?
I don't recommend any of them, no, but there's dozens of them to choose from, and most of them are free, and you can
try them out and then uninstall if it doesn't work right.
Yep.
Yeah, there is the one that I use is in fact called Wi-Fi Analyzer. It is from somebody called Farproc, Farproc. Wi-Fi Analyzer. There are a couple with that name. The one I use is from a guy called, or a company called Farproc, or a woman called Farproc, or a dog, I don't know, called Farproc, Farproc. That's the one I happen to have found first, and therefore the one I use. But they all do pretty much the same thing. And being able to map the Wi-Fi in your home, and not just in your home, but, you know, my beloved bride wants to listen to her podcasts and things, her streaming stuff from the backyard, her Pandora.
Yep.
From the backyard. So I had to make sure that I had an extension that reached into the backyard for when she was out there, and also the driveway, and also the front yard when she's working out there and sitting on the porch, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just the... it's not just in your house. It's pretty much anywhere. And again, you'll see plenty of things. Oh, it's Barb again.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, go ahead.
It looks like I've tried about half a dozen of them. And it says free. I say get and see how it works. And the Apple Airport Utility has a Wi-Fi scanner built in, so I usually...
But it doesn't move around.
You move and then scan again, and you move and scan again.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Back to the phones. Our caller is once again Barb from Rochester, New York.
Yes. Hello. I'm sorry to bother you again.
No.
I understand that a gentleman called in right after we hung up, and I didn't catch his suggestion on what I could possibly do with my iPhone.
No, it wasn't for you. It was for the person several before you, a guy named Mike, who was having a problem with a scanner.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Fred from Henrietta. Okay.
No. Sorry.
Okay. It's all right. Sorry to bother. Bye.
Not a problem. Thanks, Barb.
Go ahead. We got another.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sorry. It wasn't for you. It was about Mike's scanner and how he might be able to run that scanner, even though he doesn't seem to have the right drivers.
All right. I got another buddy, somebody else that texted on, and it says, hello. It's the other Rich from Irondequoit. The question is how to unlink contacts from two different Gmail accounts, not each one, but all of them in each account. Thanks. My question is how to unlink contacts from two different Gmail accounts, not each one, but all of them in each account.
Stop sharing the contacts.
Yeah.
In your account, you tell it what other accounts you want to share your contacts with. So turn that off. I would guess. I'm logging into my Google Contacts right now.
You're right. You can unlink them from a specific phone if that's easier. The easiest way to do that is the default will sync all contacts in every account. So what if you're using Google contacts, you can do that. If you're in a Samsung, you're probably using the Samsung contacts, and you can't do that. You got to use the Google contacts. It depends on which program you're actually using. But in Google contacts, you can select which accounts to sync. I remember, at least in the earlier version of Samsung, I stopped using Samsung a while ago, but in the earlier version, you could not do that. And I'm sure there are others where you cannot do that. So if you're not using Google Contacts, that may be the one to go to. Now, you may have to import your contacts from your other program to Google Contacts, but once you're in there, you can decide, you can turn on or off your particular contact set.
Yeah, he's got to decide on how many accounts that he's tied it to, whether to do them selectively or just undo them all and then go back and redo the ones that he wants.
Right. Well, again, it depends on what program you use.
Yep. A lot of variables.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, long ago gave up on pretty much everybody's programs except for the ones from Google. And, of course, now that I have a Pixel phone, I get no cruft at all, none of the bloatware at all.
It's the only phone that I'll ever own.
Yeah, yeah. I love my Pixel phone.
Again, I love that feature. I was standing there with a couple folks, and my phone goes off. And they go, aren't you going to answer it? I said, no, I'm going to have it screen it. So they go, what? And I says, here, watch. And I had it screen and it pulls up the message. And they go, oh, I wish I had that. It's great. I said, it just goes. And they usually hang up before the message even finishes. So I know it's a spam call. And
done.
Done, because otherwise, if it was somebody that really wanted to get in touch with me, they'd leave a message. Otherwise, I know it's spam, and it gets blocked.
I have a ringtone for my wife and my daughter, and for a couple of other people, different ringtones for them, so I know who's calling me.
Yep.
And if it's them, I will answer. Otherwise, I just let it go to voicemail. Yep. If I don't know you, it goes to voicemail.
Well, anytime I see it and, you know, there's
and
no name.
It dies there.
It does, you know, there's right. No name. No.
Right.
Automatically goes to the, you know, leave a message or, you know, now I hit that screen button. But yeah, I couldn't believe they're just sitting there with their jaw, you know, hanging down. It's like.
The feature may, in fact, be in their phone and they just don't know it.
Could be.
You know, one of the things that I like, I bought one of those $100 Walmart tablets, 8-inch Walmart tablet.
Oh, yeah.
For $100, I thought, what the heck, let me try it. So I did, and it comes with 4 programs from Walmart that I cannot get rid of. But you can take them off the home screen. There's a little button in the corner for them, a little screen button, soft button, on the screen for them. So as long as I don't press that, I don't see them. And it's only 4. So there isn't a lot of it, and they don't take up a lot of space. So it's mildly annoying, but not really annoying. When I had a Samsung phone, holy mother of pearl. Half the phone was taken up.
Bloatware.
Yes.
All that bloatware they throw on there, and it's like throwing in all this other junk.
That you cannot get rid of. Yeah.
That's why when I first got the Pixel phone, I looked at it and thought, wait a minute. There's nothing on the screen. And I'll never forget this. The lady that was, selling it to me, she goes, yeah, that's the nice thing about this. You load what you want.
Yep.
I go, really?
Yeah.
She goes, yeah, there's nothing on there. You got to put down what you want. There's some of the Google stuff, you know, you can pull in there that's on there.
Right.
Oh, this is great.
Yes. Yes, it does come with some Google stuff, but you can remove those if you don't want them.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you?
Well, but the point is you can.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you have complete freedom.
Right.
But the other thing is it doesn't shove all that other junk.
Right.
And like you were saying, though, like on that tablet, you can't get rid of it.
Right.
It's in there no matter what. You got to put up with it, and it's like, yeah, no.
I have to say that $100 8-inch tablet, it seems to be fast enough for my needs. I mostly use it as an e-reader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought about getting a Kindle or one of those, but the problem is I read in Kindle, I read in Nook, I read in Google Play books, I read stuff from the various libraries.
I finished my book series on my Kindle, a free book for Kindle.
Right.
My July book, I finished it early. So now I got to wait another week to get my August free book to read book number 9.
Right, all right. But you can wait in between and you read another book.
Read another book,
from another company. So I need something that's not just Kindle. And for $100, I thought, how can I go wrong? And I couldn't. It's great. It is great. So I've been very pleased. It's been nice. They also have a $70 7-inch tablet, but I haven't played with that one. It's got less RAM. It's got a slower processor, and I haven't played with it.
How much was that one?
$70.
Oh.
And this one's $100.
For $30, you're bigger.
Well, it's an 8-inch screen. It's a much faster processor. It's twice the RAM.
It's
worth the $20, $30.
Yeah, whatever.
But I did get one of those for my wife to use at market as a screen to show pictures.
Oh, okay.
And so I bought a second one to give to my daughter, and I don't know if she's played with it at all yet. I just bought those, so we'll see. But those are I love my little 8-inch tablet. I found a case for it, so I don't have to worry about dropping it.
Well, I've got those little Samsung tablets.
Yeah.
And I've got
one of those. I love it, but this is newer and faster.
No, it's small. Well, I have the one just like you have, and I tether it to my phone, and then that way I can read like you say, download books and all that. I'm using that, and it works great. And the speed isn't the fastest, but you know what? For the little bit that I use it, it's fast enough, and I can view various YouTube videos that I like to keep up on. And that.
What I use my Samsung for is I keep it downstairs next to the big TV, so if I need to look up something on IMDb while I'm watching movies.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
I find that it's very hard for me to watch anything anymore. Yeah. Without IMDb open on some device.
Where do I know them from?
Exactly. For a while, I had this weird obsession with how tall actors were. Because, you see, here's a 6'4" actor and a 5'8" actor, or a 5'2" actor, and they're eye to eye. That's not right.
You don't see the Apple box.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So I was spending a lot of time looking up people's heights to think who's standing on an Apple crate out of sight. So yeah, that was a weird obsession I had for a little while. But yeah, so generally speaking, I find it difficult now to watch any movie without IMDb open. Yep. On some device, so that I can look people up. Of course, now, I think it was Netflix. I think. When you pause, it brings up pictures of the actors who are on the screen.
Amazon X-ray.
Maybe that. Amazon. Maybe it was Amazon.
But I'm trying to find a way that I can watch the thing on the big screen and have the X-ray stuff on the little screen.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it doesn't stop the stupid thing I'm watching.
Right.
So the nearest I've been able to get is I hit play at the same time on my both devices. And then just have the X-ray open on my phone while it's playing.
I paused the other day. What was I watching? I think it was Community or Parks and Rec. One of those two.
The new Shelter at Home edition. They made a new episode where they're all sheltering at home.
Oh yeah, no, I haven't gotten to that one yet. On Community, you mean?
I think they both did it.
I don't know. But anyway, it was a thing, and they had all the people in the scene, and one of the people they had was Sandra Bullock. And she isn't in any of the episodes. Because I was looking at the IMDb of the episode, and when I looked back at the screen, her photograph was on a bulletin board, which was what was showing when I paused. And I thought, wow. Whoever wrote that algorithm did a heck of a job.
Yep.
Well, it's just like Google. When you sit there and you think, well, wait, look for
car.
A red,
red cars was my
yeah, red car, and
example.
It's like, wait a minute. Well, way up in the corner, and
right. If you look through the white car that's on the screen, you'll see a red car behind it.
Yeah.
So they've done an except maybe they're using Google's search algorithm. Who knows? Who knows? But there's the stuff that we can do now that we never used to be able to do.
10, 15 years ago. It hasn't been that long, folks.
5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable how far we've come. And, granted, the chips and all that have slowed down greatly.
Right.
Because, you can only go so fast with them before they just be too stupidly hot to even run them. They'd wind up overheating and causing more issues than that. Like I say, the biggest thing they have to concentrate now on is battery life.
Right.
And that's where I still say, any manufacturer of the cell phones, because that's where the big money is right now, that can come out with a longer running battery, it's going to hit it big. If they can sit there and tout that their battery will last 2 full days without charging and doing all this and all that.
Well, let me give you some good news then. I have a very quick news item I have time to read.
Yeah.
in the pursuit of a rechargeable battery that can power electrical vehicles or EVs for hundreds of miles on a single charge, scientists have endeavored to replace the graphite anodes currently used in EV batteries with lithium metal anodes. But while lithium metal extends an EV's driving range by 30 to 50%, it also shortens the battery's usage life due to lithium dendrites.
And it's also much more volatile and ready to explode.
Right. Well, what they've now got are some solid electrolytes made from both polymers and ceramics that don't create dendrites. So that's in a brand new battery that hasn't hit the market for years.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say.
Well, I saw David Pogue did a science thing 5 years ago now on these solid electrolytes.
Right.
And it still hasn't come to market yet.
Still hasn't come to market. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in, particularly those of you who called in early. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It's been a great week. Thank you all. Please, and thank you for those of you who have been kind enough to donate to Jazz 90.1 so that we can remain publicly supported. We appreciate that. Be good to one another. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We will see you in just 166 hours.